MSO News, giving voice to the North Shore. This is North Shore Today for Wednesday, June 12, 2024, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber. Moynihan Lumber supporting local news coverage and communities on the North Shore. I'm Rick Moore. Marblehead gets a new select board member. A Linfield man faces gun charges. And today we put a focus on budget and programs at Essex North Shore Tech.
I'm Bill Newell, and a bit later in sports, we have some teams that are advancing to state championship games in the days ahead. Rick?
All right, Bill, thank you. Mostly sunny, 70s, high tide, Gloucester Harbor, 4:49 p.m. Marblehead town elections were held yesterday. Dan Fox was elected to the select board, along with incumbents Moses Grader, Brett Murray, Aaron Noonan, and Alexa Singer. A 30-year-old Linfield man was arrested in Boston Monday night following a shooting on Boston Common. Daily Item reporter Adam Levine writes today that Dana Loader of Linfield has been charged with carrying a loaded firearm without a license, second offense, possession of ammunition without an FID card, and possession of a Class B drug, crack cocaine. He's expected to be arraigned in Boston Municipal Court. Gloucester's St. Peter's Fiesta Celebration of Faith and Family opens on Wednesday, June 26, with the procession and outdoor mass celebrated on the following Sunday. Gail McCarthy reports in today's Gloucester Times that the procession is in need of floats. Anyone interested in creating a float can contact St. Peter's Fiesta Committee President Joe Novello at 978-879-9239. The Beverly City Council continued department budget sessions at last night's meeting. Essex Tech Superintendent of Schools Dr. Heidi Riccio addressed the council on programs and budget development at the school. One topic that came up last night was the school's After Dark program.
The After Dark program, Beverly was the second district to sign on to the Beverly program, second to Gloucester. And we started out with some programs where enrollment had declined. And so we do look at enrollment as a factor. So if a program is declining enrollment, such as auto collision, we do need to make, despite our attempts to increase enrollment, a difficult choice of closing that program. Because from a cost perspective, if there's a program like electrical that has 70 grade 9 students that would like to be in electrical, but we can only take 36, we need to look at that realistically and say we may need to hire another teacher. And so with the After Dark, we've had some shifts in the programs, one from an enrollment perspective.
Riccio shared a story of two Beverly students involved in that program.
We have had actually two of your students, one in plumbing and one in advanced manufacturing, that started out at the After Dark program and came to us and said, can we come here full time? And we think that's great. And so they ended up enrolling full time. We didn't get the money for them. Our money was already, because what we looked at was what's in the best interest of this kid. And I will say that they were brothers. They happened to be brothers. And one of them came to the after the Nighthawks program at night. Our plumbing student came to the Nighthawks program. And then the advanced manufacturing student just graduated, and he is top of his class. He was number one, hands down, in the machine shop. But in addition to that, the teachers and the community mass hire liked him so much that they hired him for the Nighthawks program to be a teaching assistant. And so that's kind of a success story. So if a student does want to come to us full time, we will open that door for them.
The Night program has also allowed the school to continue some programs that had lower enrollment numbers, serving fewer students.
Another one of our success stories is the construction and craft laborers program, and that was our first After Dark program that we held. And that is a direct pipeline to Local 22, which is the laborers union. Laborers union goes from Boston or Malden all the way to Gloucester. So our kids have that opportunity to enter into that union, provided that they meet the union requirements, meaning drug-free, anything else that a labor union would require. But they do get significant amount of credentials that will take them into that employment opportunity.
That's Essex Tech School Superintendent Dr. Heidi Riccio speaking before the Beverly City Council last night on BevCam. We'll have much more with Dr. Riccio as part of North Shore Today Extra. And Beverly will be holding its 21st annual Arts Fest this Saturday. The event is a free outdoor festival run by Beverly Main Streets that features shopping, live music, local food, and family activities. According to the Salem News, over 125 artists and crafters will set up to sell their wares alongside local retailers. We have a link at the top of this post with additional details on Saturday's event in Beverly. Sports next with Bill Newell, followed by North Shore Today Extra.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Yes, we are a full-service lumber yard, but we also offer doors and windows and kitchen cabinets. Please visit us in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Taparo Capital Management. It's time to craft your retirement plan. Click on the Taparo banner at the top right of our website and begin creating your winning game plan.
If you're a soap bar user and you're always annoyed by the fact that when you use your entire bar, you're stuck with this little sliver of soap that you don't know what to do with, hold on, because I think I have the solution for you. It's always a pain to have that little sliver of soap that we didn't really know how to use but didn't want to waste and throw away. So we invented this cute cube-shaped soap bar that then you can place your old little soap sliver right into. There's a carved out X in the center of the bar that then you can place your old soap sliver into. You just break up that little sliver into pieces that are two or three and it fits right inside. And bam, now you've got a brand new soap bar and you didn't have to waste anything. If that's something you're interested in and you want to support a sustainable small business, then head on over to our shop at exobath.com. You can buy one for yourself or give it as a gift. It ships anywhere in the United States and you can get 20% off your first order.
Click on to the Exobath banner at the top of our website. This is MSO Sports bringing voice to the North Shore. The Red Sox lost to the Phillies last night 4-1 at Fenway Park. The Celtics resumed the NBA Championship Series tonight in Dallas. The Celtics lead that series 2-0. Gloucester Times sports editor Nick Giannino is out in Dallas covering Game 3 and 4 this week in Texas. With the 2-0 series lead, the series is there for the taking. Can they do it? Nick Giannino on this year's Celtics.
Been following them pretty closely all season. Obviously had the best record in the NBA this year, but they went into the playoffs with some question marks, right? I mean, they've done this before, like we spoke about off the air here, Bill. You know, they've had some great regular season teams, and for whatever reason, they tended to sputter out or kind of panic a little bit deep in the playoffs, and that hasn't been the case this season. I think first and foremost, you know, Brad Stevens did a terrific job kind of rounding out the roster around Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. You know, bringing in a Drew Holiday, bringing in a Kristaps Porzingis, and they've just been terrific fits. But like you said, the biggest thing is they're a team. I mean, any one of those guys, their entire starting lineup, and Al Horford coming off the bench, he's actually been starting in the finals with Porzingis coming back from injury. But those top six guys, you know, even Pritchard and Hauser coming in, hitting some big shots here and there, it really is a team mentality this year. And I think Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are at the points in their careers where they just want to do whatever it takes to win.
Again, that's Gloucester Times sports editor Nick Giannino in Texas. In high school baseball, two North Shore teams have advanced to the state championship games later this week. In D3, St. Mary's beat Tantasqua 1-0, and in D5, Georgetown over Pioneer Valley 7-5 last night. However, Salem, the number 24 seed in D4, lost to number 4 seeded Seekonk in the state semifinal game yesterday, 1-0. In softball, Marblehead was eliminated by Westfield 3-2 in a state semifinal, while Georgetown in D5 advances to the state championship game with a 4-2 win over Tanhanto Regional. In boys tennis yesterday, Linfield edging Hamilton Wenham 3-2. On to the finals they go. And Manchester Essex over Pioneer Valley 5-0. They too are on to the state championships. We do have MIAA posts up on our website with schedules, game results, and MIAA tournament links available to you. This is North Shore Today, giving voice to the North Shore, the area's only daily news and sports podcast. Along with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell, hoping you have a great Wednesday. North Shore Today Extra is next with North Shore Tech School Superintendent Dr. Heidi Riccio.
Taparo Capital Management. It's time to craft your retirement plan. Click on the Taparo banner at the top right of our website and begin creating your winning game plan.
This is North Shore Today Extra. Today we're going to dip into some of the audio from BevCam from last night at the City Council budget hearing. In this budget hearing, you're going to hear from Dr. Heidi Riccio, who is the superintendent of schools for North Shore Essex Tech, as Beverly does send students to Essex Tech. You'll get her presentation, pretty informative on the school, her programs, her budget concerns, as well as concerns from Beverly counselors. And one was a question on the admission policy. So again, today on North Shore Today Extra, some extended audio with Dr. Heidi Riccio from North Shore Tech, the superintendent there of schools.
As you know, we are the vocational school of choice on the North Shore with over 1,800 students currently enrolled, with an additional 25 students coming on board next year. We have 17 sending communities, but we also serve 41 additional communities for the agricultural programs across three counties. And why that is important is that almost 400 of our students do not count towards our Chapter 70 funding, because that Chapter 70 funding stays in that community, and then we bill them out. So those students are billed twice a year. Unfortunately, we do have some challenges with receiving that funding sometimes. In particular, one city is refusing to pay, and so then now we work with the communities. So just so that you know, the underlying other financial matters that go into our budget process beyond the actual budget process. Our budget, we have some key drivers, similar to probably Beverly and every community across the Commonwealth, is we were in teacher negotiations last year, which were quite challenging, but we were able to settle prior to June 30th, and that accounts for approximately 57% of our budget increase, and that's between steps and columns. 17% is approximately related to our capital, and this year we are celebrating our 10th year being in business as Essex North Shore, and with that comes some possible challenges, whether it's a rooftop that may go down, cooling systems. We actually have three cooling systems that we're working on correcting the challenges this summer with, which cost funding. And what's different between a city school or municipal school to a regional vocational school district is that we operate as our own DPW. So we hire our own, or we have our own on-hand staff to do all of the work that a DPW person would do. So all of the grounds, facilities, the plowing, we do not subcontract out the plowing, we do it ourselves. With that obviously comes the cost of equipment, which is quite expensive. We also utilize our students in the landscaping and arbor program in order to reduce the costs as much as we can. We did add $500,000 into our capital expenditures, which is obviously a change from last year. And how we were able to do that is we start our budget process in November and then carry it through into February. And we do update our finance subcommittee each month to see where we're at. Our departments receive a Google spreadsheet from our business manager. They create their wish lists, and then we start weekly meetings from there with our supervisors, administrative team, and directors to determine what is necessary. In order to get to the 7.85 over last school year, we did make cuts as it relates to instructional supplies. So most of the programs we level funded. There are a couple programs that we could not level fund due to the cost of materials. Running a vocational school with plumbing and copper and metals and even plywood being four times more than it was 4 years ago has a significant cost factor. But we have been very creative as it relates to donations of materials as well as private and competitive grants. So we're very proud to announce a little bit more than what is in your budget book. So at the time of printing, it was done in March. So as of March, we printed this document. So since March, our total competitive grant funding and private grant funding totals $7.07 million. And we believe that it's those grants that we go after. We go after every penny with the intention of reducing the budget as much as we can onto our sending communities. We are the second most affordable vocational school in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, which we believe is because of the hard work of our dedicated teachers, staff, administrators, school business administrator, who has no problem telling the superintendent that she can no longer spend money in March because we're watching our budget. And so with that, we are quite successful in having some excess and deficiency, which again is something different than a municipal school system. Any funding that is left over, it goes into an excess and deficiency, which we are able to use for capital projects. And we are doing that this coming school year. We do have a late 1960 building, Gallant Hall, which is on the south side of campus, and we do need a new HVAC system. So that HVAC system 4 years ago would have cost us approximately $1 million, and at this point right now it's about $4 million. So we are looking at creative ways of funding that, including federal reimbursement. And so at this time in your book, I can review the book if you'd like, or if you've had time to review it, I believe Representative Manzo did submit books to you previously, so I'm certainly open to any questions that you may have related to the budget and everything else.
Thank you. Councilors, I will open it up to questions or comments. Councilor Sweeney, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for taking the time to walk us through the overview of the budget. My question's a general one. I know that, and I'm sure we'll hear from the public schools here about some of the pressures that the traditional school systems in the Commonwealth are facing. Special education costs, transportation costs. You mentioned teacher salaries and collective bargaining that you guys had wrapped up. But I'm curious, given the specialized nature of the programs that are offered, are there other costs directly related to running some of the programs that the school offers that are increasing at a significant rate that we should be aware of?
Thank you for asking that. Well, we do not have the challenges that a municipal school does as it relates to special education. However, we have seen increase of costs. For example, next year we will have 3 1-to-1 nurses, which traditionally in a vocational school is unheard of, and we have an increase of 1-to-1 paraprofessionals. Unfortunately, incoming grade 9 students, we do not know what their services are until they do a transition planning, which is done typically in June and throughout the summer. So any incoming grade 9 students, because of our blind admissions, if they do need a 1-to-1 nurse, that has not been budgeted. It's approximately $105,000 it's more than that if we contract out. And so with that, we have to be creative in what else then lets go. So we've been able to reduce staff without reducing staff because we're not going to replace some of the retirements in order to do that. But additional costs certainly is the cost of materials. We're looking at copper, wire for electrical, food in and of itself. Unfortunately, some of our families go without food just because of the cost of food. So imagine duplicating that for our culinary arts program, where their job is to really prepare them for the workforce. Some of the lighter programs, like information technology, we call it a light program because it's an academic-based program. So really what you need is the technology to change, and that technology is every 3 to 5 years. So the consumables, the instructional supplies, is really where kind of the costs have increased significantly. In addition to that, the cost of maintaining the equipment, we have a multi-million dollar machine technology program, and with that, each year, that multi-million dollar shop, all of that equipment needs to be maintained professionally. So while our teachers and students learn that technician piece of it, it's definitely basic entry level for those students, and it's really about that overall maintenance. I can give you a quick example. In our auto collision shop, each year we have to get the spray booth maintained, and that one maintenance is about $5,500. in the auto tech shop. Each of our lifts, as you can imagine, it's a hydraulic system, and if a car falls on somebody's head, we'd have much larger challenges than just maintaining. So we have to make sure that that equipment is maintained as well, and it is signed off. And those are just two small examples that we're looking at.
Okay, those are helpful examples, so thank you for outlining that. The next question that I have is another general question with regards to enrollment. Could you, at a high level, walk me through, like, I know you guys have students coming from a handful of different municipalities, and it's something where in Beverly we've seen an increase in the number of students each year that have been going to Essex Tech, which is great, and it speaks well of the programs that the school is offering, that it's attracting such a level of interest. But because the budget's increasing so significantly for Beverly's portion, that's kind of piqued my interest in learning more about the enrollment admissions process. Could you walk me through, do you guys take into account proportion of students from towns or from each town in the district? Does that come into account, or are there other factors that you look to as opposed to where a student is coming from?
Sure. So in the Commonwealth, only about four regional vocational schools have a minimum allotment, not a maximum allotment. And so, for example, Shawsheen Tech has a minimum allotment. If they have satisfied that minimum allotment and there are extra seats available, those extra seats would go to another community that needs those seats. We do not have that. We do not have a regional agreement. We have what we call bylaws, which is a step above a regional agreement. And we look at that periodically. I believe it's every 2 to 3 years to see if we need or want to make any changes. Over the last 5 years, we created a admissions subcommittee, and that was for twofold. One is to look at our communities from an equitable lens to see, are we attracting, or are kids that are non-white or our ML newcomer population or a special education population are getting in at that same pace? And so with that, and Representative Manzo is also a part of that community or that subcommittee. And we've made some changes to the admissions policy because of that. And then we have also seen we've been quite successful in meaning that when we first started this process, we had 3% non-white, and we're at now 20% non-white. So we do believe that the work of the subcommittee has really made us look at that data. We also have a really great dashboard on our website. And if you just do Essex North Shore admissions dashboard, you can disaggregate the data not only by our sending communities and out-of-district communities, but you can isolate Beverly itself, and you can look at patterns. And when I first started, the four cities and the one large town, which is Danvers, have always been the five largest programs because those are typically the cities and the towns that desire that vocational education. So that's not anything that's different from 1980s. You know, a community that's of higher affluence is not going to have as many applicants as a city that is more diverse. And so with that, we did see an influx of students in Danvers over the last few years, but a few years ago, we were asked to look at the Beverly data to make sure that our students from Beverly were getting in. And so with that, that was part of the admissions, and I think that's probably where you see that switch in the data, is that we were really looking at making sure that kids had access. And I will also thank Beverly Superintendent for working with us on that, because it's not just the regular enrollment, but it's also the after dark enrollment. And so, yes, there has been a switch. We have also added seats. As you know, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts has a shortage of vocational seats. And so our mission has always been to train the workforce, but to also expand as much as we can. We're very fortunate. Our campus has 166 acres of land and multiple buildings that we can renovate, which we have primarily done by our students in the building trade program. As a result, we've increased our incoming grade 9 in 2017 was 335, and in 2024, it will be 500. So we've increased the number of seats significantly. And so we're at a stopping point now, or a pausing point, because unless we do any large building projects through the MSBA, we do not have much more space to expand. We did put in an addition in our animal science building. Animal science is our largest program, first, and then second is electrical. And electrical is the program where most of your the largest percentage of students from Beverly are in our electrical program. But the animal science building, we did get a bond as well as some grant funding from the state in order to create or build a 5,000 square foot addition. And so that should be completed by June 30th. So that's where, kind of long and short, but if anyone has any questions or would like to meet with me privately, I can certainly come and explain it. There's a lot of different variables that come into it, but I can certainly, if you have about 6 hours, we can go over the nuts and bolts, and I'm happy to do that, because I'd rather you get all of your your questions answered than go off and think, okay, I don't have everything that I need.
That is a portion of what Dr. Heidi Riccio had to say at the Beverly City Council meeting last night. The entire presentation can be viewed and heard on BevCam on YouTube or on Beverly Cable Television. But again, that is Dr. Heidi Riccio in front of the Beverly City Council budget hearing last night. And this is North Shore Today Extra on MSONewsSports.com.